Hannah, what did your mum die of?
3 bullets.
Sci-fi action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well.
Welcome, Nicole, to a special Thanksgiving recording edition of A Cure for the Common Craig. We're recording on Thanksgiving, but this isn't a Thanksgiving episode.
Right. I'm so stuffed right now.
Me too. I ate way too much slow cooker lasagna, Nicole.
That was our Thanksgiving treat.
Yes.
Since it was just going to be the two of us, we decided to do non-traditional.
And we do non-traditional fairly frequently.
Yeah.
Because usually I have some sort of job over the past, oh, I don't know.
20 years.
Yeah, long, long amount of time that involves something where I'm required for Black Friday or something.
Yeah.
Even though there's not really Black Friday this year, I still work at a place that's going to be open on Black Friday. Yeah. So usually we can't really do a lot of traveling. It's one or the other. It's like Thanksgiving or Christmas. Usually we choose Christmas. But even that might get wiped this year because
who
of everything.
Knows?
All the chaos, Nicole.
With the COVID.
COVID chaos. Yes. So, yeah, we had lasagna. Did you like it?
It was good.
It was good. I think this is the best slow cooker lasagna we've made. And you know what it was, Nicole? It was the additional sauce.
We really sauced
it up.
It might have been the extra seasoning I put into the ground beef, though, while you weren't looking.
You think that may have helped, too?
Maybe. Hmm. Maybe so.
I was more interested in the sauce. Anyway, yes. So, we're both stuffed. I haven't even had a cookie yet. We made some cookies.
Oh, man.
I haven't even had one because I'm too full.
Yeah. Just the cookies. You didn't need it.
I'm sick. I'm just sick.
Maybe later
I'll have one of those cookies. So also on Nicole, because of this whole thing where I'm usually stuck here, so you're stuck here too because you're a lovely person. So what we usually do on Thanksgiving, we mentioned this in a Thanksgiving time frame episode last year too.
Yeah.
But we play a little game involving movies on Thanksgiving. It's a little tradition that we've
surprise,
done.
Surprise, surprise, it involves movies.
Yes, a tradition game that we play involving movies. I know, that's just ludicrous.
Shocking.
For us. Uh-huh. So, what we do, Nicole, what do we do?
Well, we take each individually, we prepare 3 names of an actor, director.
Somebody like that.
Somebody that has something to do with a movie.
Yes. 3 names apiece,
and we put them, and we draw that person.
We write them down on paper. Yeah.
We do. We write them down on old school paper.
Old school, drawn out of a hat lottery.
And we pick out a name.
Yes.
And then, subsequently, we write down 3 movies apiece that person had to do with.
Had something to do with.
Right.
Yes, exactly. So, what was the name that was drawn this year?
So, this year was Elijah Wood.
Yes, and in the past, sometimes we've had Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Uh-huh.
We had River Phoenix. We had Jennifer Jason Leigh. We had Rita Hayworth.
Rita Hayworth.
I don't know who else we had.
We've played this game a lot.
Yeah, we played this game a number of years, but it's fun. It's a fun game. So this year was kind of weird because Elijah Wood, you don't really think of him necessarily as being in kind of like creepy movies all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like the first thing is like, you know, we said, you know, like you can't just write down all of the Lord of the Rings movies on the paper and throw them in there.
That's
and
not
I
said,
allowed. You can't put Dirk Gently, the TV show, on there because you love that show. You can't put that. Is he in all the episodes or just in most of them?
He's in all of them.
He's in all of them. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if he was in all of them.
He's in quite a few, like, little, like, series.
Oh, yeah. He pops up in a lot of little series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I like him in Over the Garden Wall.
Over the Garden Wall.
He voices Dirk. And, you know, I know he's in Willard. Or Wilfred.
Wilfred? I think it might be Wilfred.
I think it might be Wilfred, too. I've never seen that, so I don't really know.
So you're just making unsubstantiated claims. So, yes, but we ended up with him this year. And I wrote down one, like, straight-up horror movie on my list of three. And then another movie that was kind of like a weird, oddball one. I think horror is one of the tags for it, the genre tags on IMDb. But I didn't think it was that horrific. Because we've watched two of the movies so far.
Yeah.
And then another one I put in was The War with Kevin Costner, which was not drawn. That one wasn't selected. You put in...
I put in North.
North, which I told you, yes, has a reputation of being one of the worst movies of all time, but I don't think I've ever seen
it. I've seen it. I saw it.
Did you remember liking it?
I remember liking it.
You like one of the worst movies of all time. And that's just the critics saying that.
Yeah,
so it might be a wonderful little movie.
I remember liking it, but that was also a very long time ago.
A long time ago.
What
else did you put in
there? Oh, gosh. I put in North. I put in The Good Son.
Yes, but The Good Son is what we ended up with.
And I put in one more.
Yeah, I can't remember what your other one was.
Oh, great.
Yeah, well, anyway. Oh, it was All I Want? Is that what it's called?
Oh, that's
something
it.
Like
yeah.
that. Anyway. Yes, yeah, so we ended up with The Good Son, which is a little creepy movie with Macaulay Culkin, of course, as this evil child. And we just watched that one. We just finished that one up a little while ago here. So what'd you think of that one, Nicole? I haven't seen it since originally seeing it way back when, probably in like 1993 when it came out.
I said, Macaulay Culkin makes you want to slap him.
Yeah.
Just how snotty he is to Elijah Wood's character.
And everyone. He's terrible to everyone.
And they don't know he's being terrible.
Yes.
But
you were
as a
saying,
viewer, you know he's being terrible, and he just sounds so insincere.
Yes,
with his delivery, which is great for the movie.
Yes, and you said that he seems to tend to play kind of the same character, and really, the way he plays this character is not that different from how he plays Kevin in Home Alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so as a child actor. You said that it seemed like Elijah Wood does a much better job.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely feel like he has more range of emotion or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like Macaulay Culkin, he just had the like, you know, the...
Little jerk kid.
The little jerk
kid. He had that down pat.
He has that down pat. But Elijah Wood definitely had more range in this movie.
It seems that way to me, yes. And then we did watch the one... One of the ones that I selected that we've watched so far was called Come to Daddy. And that was from... That's from this year. That's from 2020 is what it said on Amazon Prime where we watched it. And I kind of enjoyed it. It was kind of a weird...
It's quirky. And I do think
weird little movie with some dark comedy.
Elijah Wood picks quirky things
to become involved in. Yes.
And I think that's great.
Nicole, I just think that's great, too.
Well, he does what he wants.
That's right. And he's got all that Lord of the Rings money. So
he
does a lot of producing, too. So that's good. He ends up doing some producing for a lot of movies as well. But yeah, Come to Daddy, if you have Amazon Prime, maybe give it a try. Because it's one that I had not heard of, just going through his list of movies, trying to find something to pick. That's the one I chose. And
what's our third movie?
Good.
We should probably tell them.
So our third movie is like straight up horror. That one is called Maniac. And that one is a remake of a 1981, I believe, William Lustig movie called Maniac, which Tom Savini did the special effects for. But we haven't watched that one yet. We're saving that one.
Yeah.
Because I said we should need to watch this while we're eating lasagna because it's probably going to be pretty gruesome. So, but in that one, yes, Elijah Wood is just a straight-up killer, Nicole.
Oh, great.
So get ready for this.
You spoiled the movie.
Yeah, it's spoiled. I think you'll find out pretty quickly, probably.
Okay.
Anyway, Maniac, that's going to be on tap next. I think that's from 2013, that remake. So, anyway, that's what we're doing. Have you been having fun? Did you have fun with the first two movies so far?
Yeah, I hope everybody else is having as good a Thanksgiving as we are.
I hope they are, too.
Don't be a jerk, Craig.
Now then.
We should probably get to the real reason, the real portion,
the real meat of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a show, remember? So, Nicole, you chose these movies for this episode.
Yeah, this was my episode.
Yeah, your episode, your choices, and you needed a little break from horror, apparently, because these are all female-led action movies, with some of them with like a sci-fi twist to them.
Exactly. So my thought was we're gonna lead with female names.
Female names.
It's
just
one-liner female names.
One, except for one. Well, is, you know, not quite, but
it's pretty.
It's close. Yeah, so yes. Yeah, so which movies did we have, Nicole?
We picked Hannah.
Hannah.
Lucy.
Lucy.
And Run Lola Run.
That's correct. So, you've got Lola, Hannah, and Lucy.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe we should talk about some of these movies, Nicole.
Okay.
Okay. So, why don't we start, we'll just do them in chronological order as far as the release dates are concerned. So, that means we'll start with
Run, Lola, Run.
And we'll come back with that after a quick break. We'll be right back to talk about Lola and why she's running.
I know.
Lola, slow down.
Why is she always running?
You're always running, and it's exhausting.
It is.
First movie, like we said, is Run, Lola, Run. This is the one that I really didn't take very good notes for. I was too engrossed in the movie.
Okay.
And then even after the fact, I didn't write down a lot of notes for it. But we're going to talk about it. So Run, Lola, Run, Nicole, came out in 1998. And it is rated R. It runs 1 hour and 21 minutes. This is listed on IMDb as a crime drama.
So, I remember seeing this at the theater.
Did we see this in the theater? I was going to ask
definitely.
You that.
This was one of the ones where we had to travel.
Did
to
we travel to the Tivoli Theater in St. Louis probably and
go,
see this?
To go see this movie because I really liked Franca Potente, if I'm saying her last name right.
Yeah, Franca Potente.
Yeah.
That is correct. So, I guess this was released in the U.S., as an official theatrical release, not part of a film festival, June 18th of 1999, Nicole.
Okay.
That seems like a long time ago.
Yeah.
The writer-director is Tom Tykwer. He's also German. And Tom Tykwer, we have another of his movies up here on the shelf somewhere called Winter Sleepers that actually came out the year before. And we've seen that once, maybe.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've ever watched it again. I think I've only seen it the one time. But I'm curious, maybe we'll have to watch it again at some point.
I seem to remember that has to do with memory.
Yeah, there's something weird that goes on in that one. I don't know exactly what it is. It feels in my mind, just from memory, to have sort of some like David Lynch kind of qualities to it. Sort of a weird kind of vibe. Something involving maybe even brain tumors or brain cancer or something. I don't know. I can't really remember exactly what it is. But there's something weird involving memory of the brain or something like that. Anyway, so Winter Sleepers, that's one that he's done. He did that one called Perfume, the story of a murderer.
I liked that one a lot. I watched it. I don't think you saw it.
I've not seen that one, but, no.
Basically, it was a poor... I think it was back in like this, I don't know, 1700s, very poor, poorly born boy. And he basically gets like, I don't know, what do they call it? They just sell the children or they take the children and they
become... Basically human trafficking in the 1700s or something.
They just become like a tanner or... You know, that's they just get forced into professions, and he gets in with like a perfumery, and then he's trying to create the perfect scent. And basically, he has to kill people he's drawn to get their essence to create this scent, and then it's very interesting.
It sounds somewhat intriguing.
He releases the scent, or he has the scent on him, and it drives people crazy, and they eat him.
Bonkers. Well, Nicole. Okay. That sounds like something maybe I'll have to watch sometime.
Or that's how I understood it.
That's how I understood it. So maybe that's all in your mind and you're crazy.
Other people might get something else out of it.
Okay. Tom Tykwer, also one of the directors involved in Cloud Atlas with the Wachowskis, which I did not know that Tom Tykwer was involved in that. He also directed a few episodes of a Netflix television series that I believe you liked quite a bit called Sense8.
Oh, yeah, Sense8.
Yeah. He directed a few episodes of that, like 3 episodes. But, anyway. So, yeah, he's done some other things since Run, Lola, Run. But Run, Lola, Run, in my mind, this is like, he should, like, put this on his mantle. You know what I mean? So, yes, like we said, this was a crime drama. It's only an hour and 21 minutes. This runs pretty quickly.
Well, because she's running the whole time.
Yeah, the pace is pretty brisk.
It's so fast.
It moves pretty quickly. There are a few down moments, like interludes almost, where you have the two main characters, Lola, played by Franca Potente, and Manny, played by Moritz Bleibtrau. Bleibtrau? Bleibtrau? Something like that. Bleibtrau? One of those names.
I don't know how to say that.
So anyway, Manny and Lola, they're like lying in bed together in these interludes and just having these sort of discussions. Yeah. And yeah, other than that though, the movie's like it moves pretty quickly. There are a few other down moments, you know. But anyway, let's talk about the movie. Nicole, what is Run Lola Run all about?
So first off, it is subtitled because they're German speaking.
Yes, this is subtitled, and unless you watch a dubbed version, you're going to have to read subtitles. If that bothers you,
it's much better in German.
It is much better if you watch the German version.
Yeah. So anyway, you have Lola who lives at home with her mom, and I guess Manny lives there too.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Manny calls Lola and says he's in trouble.
He's got an emergency.
He's got an emergency. He's in trouble. Basically, he's lost, like, I don't know, like 100,000, like, euros?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Euros? No, it's Deutschmarks, at the time, I think. So, yeah, it is 100,000 Deutschmarks at the time, which I did, like, a conversion of, like, current, which equates to basically, like, 60,000 US dollars. So, it's still a lot of money.
A lot of money. So basically, though, Manny got it by ill-gotten means, but he has to turn that into his crime boss, basically.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't turn it in, he's going to be in some big trouble.
Now, I wasn't actually sure what Manny did to obtain the money. How was it, like, a drug deal? Was it, like, selling of illegal goods?
It was diamonds.
Diamonds? Is that what it was? Okay. I missed that.
It was, yeah. So it's ill-gotten money.
Ill-gotten money.
So, yeah. So he collected the money from the diamond, you know, appraiser or whatever.
Okay.
And he was responsible for bringing it back. And he lost it. Some of these
things happen so quickly in the movie.
He lost it on the train.
Like a subway, basically.
On the subway train.
And what happened to it? Because he says what probably happened to it.
Well, he thinks what happened is he helped out this homeless man, and he thinks the homeless man has it.
Yeah, because there was some sort of situation where the police were coming onto the train, and I guess Manny was in a hurry to try to get off. To get away. And yes, he had helped this homeless guy from falling over or something like that. But then, in the whole situation, trying to help the homeless man and then trying to get away off the train to avoid the police, well, he left the bag of money on the train like an idiot.
Way to go, Manny.
And of course, then they show a scene of the homeless person seeing the bag and being like,
And then, like, taking it and, like, shuffling off with it really fast.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so what's so funny about this movie is he calls Lola, and Lola, you know, says she'll be right there. So, anyway, Lola hangs up the phone, and she starts running. Runs out the house, runs, just a lot of pictures of her running down the street, and she's... Essentially, she's running to people that can give her the money.
Right.
So she's going to, like, her father, who works in a bank. And what I think is so good about this movie is that she bumps into certain people.
Yes.
And you get to see glimpses into their lives.
Yes. There's a quick cut flashes, still images of instances that happen to these other people. Who she happens to bump into, and they change. We'll get to that.
But they're not always good. They're good and bad little flashes,
yes.
Glimpses into other people's lives. And I think that that's kind of interesting that it cuts to that because it has nothing to do with the storyline.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with Manny or Lola necessarily. Right. But yeah, so Manny apparently, what his plan is. He's going to have this money. He's going to get, you know, messed up by this crime boss that he's dealing with. So his plan is that if Lola does not get to him by noon, I think it is, he's going to rob a local
casino.
Grocery store supermarket.
Why did I say casino?
Because there is a casino involved in the movie, but that's Lola later.
So, it's a grocery store. Sorry.
He's going to rob the grocery store supermarket there, yes. If she doesn't make it to him by noon. So, what we have then is, yes, Lola running, trying to get money from her father. And, okay, so we're going to say the first time, and maybe that won't make sense to the listener right now, but we'll get to that. So, the first time, does he just deny her the money?
The first time, I think he tells her she's not... his real daughter.
Okay.
I think it's a real downer. Like, man, you shouldn't have gone to your dad because he's going through something right now.
He doesn't even care. Yeah, he's in the midst of an affair and there's something, he's dealing with that. And so basically he doesn't care what happens to Lola or Lola's mother at this point. It's just like, okay, forget it. Get out of here. You're just adding extra problems. So get lost.
So anyway, I took a note of it. It's 35 minutes almost exactly where it starts over. The movie just starts over.
But yes, but she... So, she gets to the supermarket, but it's too late in this first portion. So Manny, he's already in the process of robbing the grocery store. And she then goes in and tries to help him. And something terrible happens to one of the characters. And...
Lola says no.
Yes. Basically, she stops it. And then, the movie then... restarts. It resets.
Yeah.
So it goes back to Lola getting off the phone. She's slamming down the phone and then she runs out of the house again.
Yeah.
And again, Lola's always running. She's almost always in motion unless she's talking to her father or something. So the second time through, and this is weird. It's not your normal narrative structure because basically something's happened and Lola can't allow this to happen. So we just restart the movie.
Yeah.
So we rewind and go back to where Lola can try again, essentially. It's like in a video game. If you lose a life, and then, you know what? You get to try again. Another shot. So you go back to the beginning, and you try again. So you go back through, and this time there are changes. But also, there are instances that it seems like maybe the characters remember things than happened in the previous version of the story. Because in the first version where she's helping Manny rob the grocery store, she doesn't know how to use the gun. She doesn't know how to use a gun. There is like a safety. And she doesn't know that she needs to remove the safety until Manny tells her to do so. But in either the next story or the following one, there are three different versions, right?
Yeah.
So in either part two or part three, she's holding a gun on someone and someone says to her, "You don't even know how to use that gun." And she does, because she then takes the safety off herself. It's like she's gained knowledge.
Yeah.
Because she's seen the first part of the movie, Nicole.
So the fast pace combined with the dance music. There's like a dance music with a constant beat.
Craig, what do you call this music? Is this house music? And I said, I don't know, Nicole.
Well, because it's fun. It's such a fun, like, constant.
Yeah. I feel like it's more of probably like a straight up like techno influence. Yeah. But still, yes.
It really adds anticipation.
Yes.
And like,
Nicole's shaking her fist right now. She's like wound up.
It adds like the fervency to the whole movie.
Yes. So I don't know that we need to reveal everything that happens in each chapter here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
No,
talking about these flashes that happens to these characters that she runs into. So some of them she'll run into more than once. Like she'll run into the same woman that she runs into first every time.
Yeah.
And she's always really mean and gruff. Sometimes, like the first time that she's going through the flashes, she becomes like a kidnapper and tries to kidnap a baby.
Yeah.
And then the next time you go through the flashes with her, she wins the lottery.
Yeah.
And becomes rich and she seems very happy. And then the third time, I can't remember what happens to that character the third time.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either. And then the same thing, there's a guy with a bike that wants to sell her his bicycle and she just refuses every time. The first time I think he gets into an accident on his bicycle, meets a nurse, they get married, and they're happy. The next time, something happens to him, and he becomes kind of like downtrodden and some sort of like, I don't know if he's like an addict or what happens to him, but yes, he ends up in not a very good state.
He took a turn for the worse.
Yeah, so it's weird how like these different scenarios, flashes, appear each time for these different characters. Yeah. It's kind of a fun thing to look for.
All in all, I think this is such a quirky cast of characters, and I think the movie is fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. This is one that we don't watch often enough, and maybe that's a good thing because it comes off as more fresh.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen this for a very long time, and I was honestly a little surprised at how well it held up. Yeah. I feel like still in 2020 versus way back when this came out
in the 90s.
1998, 1999. Yeah. It still works very well more than 20 years later. This is pretty solid. It's a pretty solid little movie. The pace is constant. Like you said, she's always running. There are different styles going on here, too. You have, like, the sequences where she's running out of a building, but, like, they'll flash to, like, a sequence of animation. So it'll be, like, animated Lola and animated characters that pop up, things like that. And, yeah, you have these characters who might die in one version of the story, and then for some reason in the next version of the story, they don't die. At one point, Lola ends up trying to rob the bank. And yeah, there's all kinds of different variations here. There's the casino situation that you mentioned. She goes to the casino and tries to win some money. And sometimes when Lola, it gets very intense, she just lets out this big scream. And then sometimes things sort of turn the right way for
even
her.
Out for
yeah.
her.
Yeah. So, yeah. Definitely Run Lola Run is certainly it's a very exciting kind of movie to watch. Yeah,
it's definitely an amasser.
Yes, definitely. Peeper. Definitely one to amass. Yes, we're not going to murder this one for sure. But yeah, it's definitely an intense experience, something to watch if you haven't seen it, especially if you like things that are a little bit more unique and maybe you like some action as well. Definitely worth checking out. Certainly, Lola is a character that, you know, a lot of really the characters you don't learn a whole lot about, most of them, but what you do pick up, you do end up getting involved in the lives of Lola and Manny specifically. I feel like you do care about them. I think those interludes kind of help a little bit as far as that goes, where they're having sort of philosophical discussions. But yeah, definitely Run Lola Run. I enjoyed it. I'm glad you picked this one. It was a very good time, Nicole.
Yeah, I'm patting myself on the back for these three.
Well, all three? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if this holds up, Nicole. Okay, well, yeah, so we're definitely both amassing Run Lola Run. It's worth tracking down and checking out. Okay, Nicole, next up, this is a movie that I did write down some notes for. In the first one there, Run Lola Run, we didn't really mention much regarding like the budget or what kind of money it made. That's because I couldn't really find a lot of decent information. I think budget-wise, it was supposed to cost somewhere around like the equivalent of 1.5 million US dollars, something like that. But I couldn't really find like a decent sort of list of information regarding the budget or its box office take or anything. So anyway, well, you know, sometimes that's just too bad, Nicole. So the next movie is what, Nicole?
Hannah.
Yes. This was released April 8th of 2011. It's rated PG-13 and it runs 1 hour and 51 minutes. This is an action drama, Nicole. This one, it had a budget of approximately $30 million. Domestically, it ended up making about $40 million. And then worldwide, about $63.7 million. So it did okay. It had a rough time at the box office that opening weekend. And let me tell you why, Nicole. Because at number one, a movie with an animated bunny called Hop made $21.2 million that weekend. Hannah, and Hop had already been out. Like, it had been out for a week, too. So, like, Hannah opened at number two, making $12.3 million, but could not beat Hop.
Well, I tell you what.
And then number three was the remake of Arthur, starring Jennifer Garner and Russell Brand, and that just lost to Hannah, ending up at number three at $12.2 million for that opening weekend. That was its opening weekend. So Hannah and Arthur, two single name movies going head to head, but Hop, they could not beat Hop.
Yeah, couldn't beat Hop.
So Hannah, Nicole, what do we got going on with Hannah here? What is this movie?
Well, Hannah is, basically, she's a teenager, and she is trained to fight and survive, is basically how I would describe Hannah.
From a very early age, because in this movie, how old do you think the character is supposed to be in this movie?
I would say like 15, 16.
15, 16, something like that.
Something like that.
Okay. Who plays Hannah, Nicole?
Saoirse.
Saoirse Ronan plays Hannah. That's right. And Saoirse, you may know Saoirse from other things like Atonement from 2007. Who,
you know, you know her from like everything.
The director of Hannah also directed Atonement. The Lovely Bones in 2009. Byzantium in 2012. The Grand Budapest Hotel in 2014. Brooklyn in 2015. Lady Bird in 2017. And Little Women in 2019, Nicole.
Yes.
So Saoirse is Hannah, and yes, she's trained to be
independent.
Okay. That's a good way to put it. And who trained Hannah?
So her dad
Dad,
quotation marks. So his name is Eric.
Eric Heller. Eric with a K.
Eric
played
with a
by K. Eric Bana, who's Eric with a C.
Oh my gosh.
So it's the same name, but C K.
That's right.
So he didn't have to, they didn't have to worry about mixing up his first name because he just played the same character.
That's right.
The oh, same man. Named character. But yes, Eric Bana, maybe you know him from something like Chopper in the year 2000. Maybe you've seen him in Hulk in 2003. Maybe Black Hawk Down in 2001. He was in Munich in 2005. He's been in a lot of things.
He's been in a lot of things. So you also have Kate Blanchett in
the
movie.
The versatile Kate Blanchett.
The versatile.
Yes.
And she plays a character named Marissa Viegler.
Marissa Viegler. Again, very German. Very German name there. So, Marissa Viegler, Kate Blanchett. What have we seen her in before, Nicole?
I don't know.
Is she?
She's in the... I don't think she's very well known.
This is probably her only movie,
yeah,
right? This is probably the only thing she's ever been in. But yeah, so of course, Galadriel is what, you know, a lot of nerds will know her as The Lord of the Rings, of course, and The Hobbit, when we'll talk about The Hobbit. And then Elizabeth, she played Elizabeth in 1998, way back in 1998, Nicole.
Oh
my goodness. And then, of course, she's in a movie called Carol in 2015. And maybe she was this villain in Thor Ragnarok in 2017.
Maybe so.
But she's done a lot of stuff. That's why I said the versatile Kate Blanchett, because she really does have, like, a way of selecting roles, very diverse.
Yeah.
Over the years. So many different types of movies over
exactly,
the years.
Yeah.
Yes. So she's definitely the villain in this piece.
Oh, yeah.
Marissa
absolutely.
Viegler.
So, and you also have another character named Isaacs.
Yeah.
And he's a good character. He doesn't play a good person.
No.
But his character is definitely a quirky character that adds to the story.
Adds to the story. Played by Tom Hollander, who has appeared in Pride and Prejudice in 2005, Bohemian Rhapsody in 2018, among many other things.
Yeah. So you have, like, an all-star cast.
An all-star cast, Nicole.
Anyway, so Eric and Hannah's mom, Joanna, basically, they escape.
Joanna is played by Vicky Cripes, and she was in Phantom Thread playing the character Alma in 2017.
Basically,
and other things.
Joanna and Eric, they escape a breeding program.
A breeding program?
Yeah, just to make a humans, you know, stronger, better, faster, you know. All
Is
of
it kind of like eugenics or something?
I guess. Who knows? Anyway, so Hannah is a product of a breeding program.
Yeah.
So Hannah, you know, is obviously special right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And she escapes, basically, a facility.
Well, they're in seclusion, though. The movie starts with her and Eric being in seclusion in, like, the Arctic. I think it's in Finland, because, well, that's where they shot it anyway, because they shot it in Finland in the snow, and apparently, certain times of the day, it would get to, like, you know, like 20 below zero in Finland when they were trying to do the shoot, and they were saying, man, it was cold, Nicole.
It was cold.
But yeah, so they're in seclusion, and basically, yes, he's like wilderness training Hannah, and she's like hunting, you know, deer, things like that, and an elk. I think he calls it a deer. But anyway, an elk, whatever it is. But yes, so yes, she's being trained, and he then offers her the chance. He gives her, there's like this button. It's like on a little device, and there's a switch. And he's basically says, okay, Hannah, you know, like when you're ready, you flip this switch, and Marissa Viegler will know exactly where we are, and that'll end this whole thing right here, where we're in seclusion. You can go about your life, and, you know, you'll fare as well as you can, I suppose.
Right.
But Marissa Viegler is going to be out to get you, out to kill both of us. So
she presses the button.
Rather than be in seclusion, yes, you have to make this choice. And of course, yes, the movie cannot progress, Nicole, until she flips that switch.
Right.
So, She's going to have to flip that switch. But yeah, she's taught all these things. She speaks all these different languages. So she's very well educated, Nicole.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But she flips the switch.
She flips the switch.
And then, yes, and Eric leaves. They go their separate ways. And yes, Hannah is basically rounded up then.
And brought to a secret facility. And she's told she's going to get to see Marissa Viegler.
Yes, but they bring in a fake Viegler instead. The false Viegler, the false Marissa, who's played by Michelle Dockery, who apparently is big in Downton Abbey, which I haven't seen. But yeah, anyway. So, the false Marissa is, well,
killed.
Eliminated by Hannah, who's 15 or 16 years old, you think?
Right, right. So
she's a hardened killer immediately.
She is a hardened killer immediately. So she has to kill to escape this facility.
Yes.
And she does escape, and she ends up in the desert.
Yes, in the desert, the middle of nowhere, popping out of like a manhole pretty much in the desert.
Yeah.
And then she runs across a couple of other characters, Sophie and Miles, Sophie played by Jessica Barden, and Miles played by Aldo Mayland. And yes, they're kids. These are two kids that she runs across.
And they're on a caravan trip with their mom and dad.
Yeah, the parents, who are Olivia Williams playing Rachel. Olivia Williams, of course, was the object of affection for Jason Schwartzman's character in Rushmore in 1998. And then also, the father is Sebastian, played by Jason Fleming, who's been in a lot of things over the years. Stealing Beauty, Nicole, in 1996. Deep Rising in 1998. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels in 1998. And The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the movie that pretty much made Sean Connery quit acting because he hated the experience so much, in 2003.
Forgot where we left off now.
After all that rattling and all.
Actually, okay, so Hannah and Sophie form a relationship. They become friends.
Yes.
Hannah basically stows away and starts traveling with the family.
Yeah, yeah. She keeps sneaking onto their vehicle and riding with them. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's known that she's there, and other times it's not.
Yeah.
Yes.
By the parents.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. And yeah, the definitely, like, the dynamic between Sophie, Miles, and Hannah is interesting because they're normal kids. They're like normal kids, and Hannah has had no exposure to the outside world at all.
Yeah.
She's been in this, like, seclusion for so long that she just doesn't know how things work, how to do anything. So, like, there were a couple of questions. Like, I think Sophie asks her, or Miles does, one of them asks, "Where do you come from?" And her answer is, or maybe it was a different guy, the guy that she was originally going to get a room from in the desert there somewhere. I don't know. Someone asks her, "Where do you come from?" What's her answer, Nicole? Do you remember?
Mm-mm.
Her answer is, "The forest."
The forest.
So it's like, yeah, she just has no idea of how the world works because this is not how she was raised. She was raised in this secluded area, and she only knows, like, book education. She doesn't know, like, yes, she's not streetwise, Nicole.
She's not street smart. She doesn't know how to lie.
That's right. So, and then, yes, her, I think Sebastian, the father of
Sophie
and Miles, asks her how her mom died. What did your mom die of?
So, Hannah, is your mom and dad still together?
My mother is dead. Nice one, Dad.
I'm sorry to hear that. I lost my mum when I was very young, so...
It's all right. It happened a long time ago.
Hannah, what did your mum die of?
Three bullets.
Three and bullets.
Yeah, three bullets. And it's such a funny moment. Like, it's... Because she just, like, flat out says, three bullets. Expecting to hear something like, you know, some sort of sickness or illness or a car accident or something like that. No, three bullets. Which causes everybody to kind of like, what? I think someone like spits out their drink or their food or whatever they were eating at the time. But yeah, it's pretty amusing. Just the interaction, Hannah trying to like integrate herself into this family, kind of into the real world, is always great to me. Yeah. I always think it's a great part of the movie.
And I think
her becoming human, kind of.
Is this one of Saoirse's early
movie. It is an earlier movie. She's certainly done some before this.
And I really like, I love her in this movie because I feel like she does play such an innocent killer.
And that's what it is. It's like, you have this childhood innocence, but then because of the way she was raised, she's raised to be this machine, basically.
Yeah.
And because of that, the whole movie has this weird dynamic of like a shattered innocence, but it's like an innocence that she was like never really allowed to experience. So she tries to experience some of this innocence with kind of the family dynamic that she meets up with, and then things get shattered again. So yeah, it's weird because she tries to kind of like mix into the real world and kind of get used to some things. They go on a date with some boys at one point. Yeah. But yeah, it's like she's trying to experience these things, but her background keeps getting in the way.
Yeah.
So, because there's always somebody after her, namely Isaacs and his gang, who we discussed earlier, who I love, of course, because Isaacs is, he's very German. And what is he wearing, Nicole? He's wearing a polo shirt.
He always wears like some sort of white tracksuit.
Yeah, and like he's got like white little short shorts on sometimes. Yeah,
sometimes he wears short shorts.
And there's one scene where he's like, he seems to be directing a play or something like that.
It's a strip club.
Yeah, a strip club, yes, play or something like that. So, but there's a song that plays. And he continues then to whistle the particular tune throughout the movie
And it's a little disconcerting.
To have him, you
get the feeling that he has done a lot of wet work in the past.
Wet work, Nicole? Listen to you. I think you've watched too many of these sort of movies like this.
I do love these sort of movies.
Yes. So yeah, Marissa Viegler, of course, hires Isaacs to go after Hannah and track her down. But yeah, so the whole movie then, basically, is Hannah trying to elude Isaacs, trying to elude Marissa Viegler, but at the same time, trying to catch up with Marissa Viegler at some point, too. But she's trying to get back to her father, who she's supposed to meet in Germany, right?
Yeah.
I think it's in Berlin.
And she knows the address, and she always says the address.
Yeah, she's memorized
it. It's Wilhelm Grimm's house.
Yes.
Something Strasse.
Yes.
So she rattles it off several times in the movie.
Yeah. And yeah, she's supposed to meet that character whose Knepfler is his name, played by Martin Wuttke. So yes, she's supposed to meet him there. And it's this abandoned amusement park. And it sort of has this theme of like a fairy tale theme.
Yeah.
And that's prevalent through the movie too. There are kind of these like, it's almost like this whole like innocence thing. And yeah, one source described it as a kind of a fantasy fairy tale action movie, which I can kind of see. It does kind of feel that way.
Yeah. Well, and Hannah has a book of her mother's, Joanna's, that is, you know, Grimm's fairy tales.
Yeah.
And you do see her looking at this book like once or twice.
Right.
You know, so.
And of course, ultimately, there's going to be like a scene with Marissa Viegler and Hannah that ends up where they have this confrontation.
Yeah.
And of course, this ultimate confrontation, which we don't necessarily have to spoil, Nicole, Marissa Viegler appears out of this giant wolf's head.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very obvious that we're trying to make a connection that Marissa Viegler is the big bad wolf, Nicole.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
So, but visually, it looks very good.
Yeah.
Yes. Her coming out of this giant wolf head at this amusement park. So, Hannah, Nicole, this is a pretty good movie.
It's a pretty good movie.
This is one that originally, you made me go see it in the theater, and I knew nothing about it. You're like, yeah, I want to see this movie, Hannah. And I was just like, okay, yeah, let's go see it. And I didn't really know what to expect.
I was way more excited about it than you
were. Oh, yeah, you absolutely were. Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. But I remember coming out of the movie thinking, you know, like, yeah, that was pretty good. And then we ended up buying the movie at some point, watched it again, and like, yeah, this movie's pretty good. And now this third time, like, I absolutely adore this movie.
You've only seen it 3 times?
I think 3 times. I think this is the third time I've seen it.
I've probably seen it, like, 10.
Probably 10, Craig. But yeah, there's so many great things in the movie. For me, and this movie, I assumed that it must have been based on a graphic novel. It is not. It is a straight screenplay written for the screen, not based on a graphic novel, but either the director, who we haven't really mentioned yet, is Joe Wright, who has done a number of things over the years. Pride and Prejudice in 2005, Atonement, like I said, in 2007, Darkest Hour in 2017. But, yeah, I assume that this was based on a graphic novel just because of how it looks. The director of photography, the cinematographer, Alvin, because he's also German. Alvin Kugler, he has to take some credit for this too. But the composition of the scenes and the shots looks very much to me like a graphic novel. Like, it's like I'm reading a graphic novel, but I'm watching it unfold cinematically on the screen. And I gotta say, in my mind, this one, much more for me, this movie, it works much more like a graphic novel than any of like the Marvel or DC movies or anything like that. This movie, there's something about it that really, like, it looks like panels in a comic book. The one scene that really stands out for me that I can really identify is there's a fight scene with Hannah kind of leaves the family because Isaacs has caught up with her. And they're at this freight yard, I guess is what it is, with all of these shipping containers stacked up on top of each other.
Yeah.
And there's this one scene in particular where she's fighting one of Isaac's goons or something like that. And in the background, Sophie is just kind of standing there in the background, just kind of staring.
Oh, that does look
and it feels like such like a comic book panel. And there are so many scenes in the movie like that too. Like the Big Bad Wolf scene that we talked about. You have the scene with the little merry-go-round. I don't know what you call that thing in the park, like that kids, you know, like you sit on and you spin around on.
Like a sit and spin.
Yeah, sit and spin kind of thing, but a big sit and spin. I don't know. It's like a carousel merry-go-round thing, but on a small scale that you just sit on and you spin around. Well, yeah, someone is shot and then someone else is shot and they're kind of lying on that and it kind of rotates and spins. That too looks very much like a comic book panel. And you can say, Craig, well, you know, a lot of comic book artists, they watch movies too. So maybe the comic books are based on, yes, things they've seen in cinema history. And yes, they go hand in hand. But still, visually, yeah, this one, a lot more so than most movies, really looks like a graphic novel comic book to me. Yeah.
Now they've made like a series on Prime.
Yeah, a Hannah series
on Prime. Yeah. I think you can see it on Prime.
It is an Amazon Prime exclusive, I believe. Yeah. I think they're up to the third season.
Okay.
I've not watched it. You tried it.
Watched the first two episodes, and I don't know, maybe something else came up for me, and I wasn't able to continue.
Let me tell you something. For you to not work your way through a television series, I don't know. I don't know if I have high hopes for this Hannah show, because you usually blow right through them, and this one you totally disregarded it.
But maybe something else came up that I was more interested in.
Sure. Yeah, you're trying to blow it off.
I'm
going to
get back to it.
Well, Hannah, the movie, maybe that's all I need, because it's really good. It's spectacular.
That's right.
So Hannah highly recommended the soundtrack. Like I said, there's the whistling part that comes up occasionally with Isaacs. And at that container scene, he's also, or I think it's right after that, after they've captured the family, he is flipping in his hand this metal pole, like in time with the music, and it's perfect. It's just so good, Nicole. But the score for the movie is done by the Chemical Brothers.
Oh, really?
The Chemical Brothers of Block, Rock, and Beats,
yes,
Nicole.
Yes, I know. Back for another one, Block, Rock, and Beats.
Yes, but the Chemical Brothers do the score. And after I saw this movie this time, Nicole, you know what I did?
What?
Using my work, where I work, and, you know, my resources there, I was able to obtain a copy of
the soundtrack
on CD, because I still do CDs, because I don't do vinyl, because, my God, there's too many hobbies and collections.
There's too many hobbies.
You can't do it. So, CD, I got the soundtrack for Hannah. And while I was doing that, you know, I was looking at stuff at work, and Run Lola Run, the soundtrack for that, happened to be there too, so I just got both of them. But anyway, yeah, so, but yeah, the Chemical Brothers score, I love that too. It's so good. So, Hannah, man, this one, can it have a higher recommendation from the common Craig, Nicole?
No.
I don't think so. I can't stop gushing about
it. Well, Nicole likes it too.
You like it too? Yeah. You want to amass the movie?
I do.
I would absolutely amass this movie, Nicole.
Yes.
It's really good.
It's really good.
This is really good.
Okay, Craig, we're on number three of our Women's Names series here, and we're down to Lucy.
This is it. Yep, this is Lucy.
This is Lucy.
Before we go into Lucy, one thing we forgot to mention about Hannah, real quick. Oh my God, Nicole.
Oh my God.
So, back to Hannah for a second, is that the movie begins and ends with essentially the same line.
Oh, that's right.
You remember that?
I pointed that out to you.
That's pretty cool. So, yeah, you'll have to watch the movie to see how that ties into everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, now back to Lucy. Okay.
Okay, Lucy.
Back to Lucy, here we are. So, enough with Hannah for now, Craig. Stop it. All right, so Lucy, Nicole, was released July 25th, 2014. It's rated R, and it runs 1 hour and 29 minutes. And I know it says 1 hour and 29 minutes, but this movie, I think, like, without the credits, is really only like an hour and like 21 minutes.
Wow.
Because, man, it was like
short.
A blur. Like, yeah, it went by quickly. So, this movie's an action science fiction movie, Nicole.
Mm-hmm. So, this is my second time viewing this movie.
This is also my second time viewing this movie. We saw it at the theater, I believe, didn't we?
I don't remember.
Or we, you know, rented it or watched it or something prior to this. I think we saw it at the theater.
It does have Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson as Lucy. It had a $39 million budget, Nicole, which sounds like a lot of money. $39 million, that's a pretty good chunk of cash.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you take into account that domestically, it made $126.6 million. Holy crap!
Wow.
I did not expect that at all.
I expected it
to maybe make, like, you know, $60 million.
Well,
something
that had
like
to be because it had Scarlett Johansson
in
it.
Yeah, I think it was because it was in the midst of the whole, like, Marvel, you know, Avengers kind of push, and Scarlett Johansson was super hot at the time.
Yeah.
And there are all these jokes, of course, about Scarlett Johansson's going to play, like, every single female lead from now on to the end of eternity. Like Disney's like live action Mulan. There were all these jokes online about how Scarlett Johansson was going to be Mulan and everybody was going to be so mad about it, but that didn't end up happening. But worldwide, Nicole, Lucy made $458 million. This movie raked in the cash. So Lucy, it's opening weekend, was number one, making $43.9 million in its opening weekend. $43.9 million. Number two, a distant number two, was Dwayne The Rock Johnson, starring in Hercules, which I didn't even remember, making $29.8 million. Which would be a great opening weekend if you weren't up against ScarJo. Anyway, this movie, like, I did not realize it did that well.
It did
this
great.
This is crazy. So, Scarlett Johansson, like we said, is Lucy.
Big draw.
And the movie is written and directed by Luc Besson. Do you know what Luc Besson is responsible for, Nicole?
I don't.
Well, you will in a second, because he's also the writer-director of La Femme Nikita from 1990, which then, of course, a television series was based on that you really enjoyed. But he was also the writer-director for Leon the Professional.
Oh, I love that movie.
So that one is from 1994. And then, how about this one, Nicole? The Fifth Element from 1997.
He's got a lot of
you love
good
that
ones.
One, too?
Not
and then,
but,
also, Valerian in 2017, which I didn't really care for. But if we go back to the 90s, yes.
He was rocking the 90s.
He was rocking the 90s here. And really, as a director, he hasn't done nearly as much as I thought he has. He's done some other things other than what I mentioned, but he doesn't have like this huge list of movies that he's done over the years. He kind of, I guess, picks and chooses carefully. Okay. Or maybe when he's writing a movie, it takes him a while to get the inspiration and write something that he really cares about. But he wrote Lucy here. And Nicole, let's talk about Lucy a little bit. What's this movie about? How do we start off with Lucy?
Basically, I'm just going to say you have what seems like a party girl.
Yeah, sort of a college party girl.
It never says if, like, what she's in school for.
Yeah.
She's studying in
Thailand, right? I think they're in Thailand. Yes.
Yeah, she's studying definitely in another country. And basically, she meets this loser guy.
A loser guy.
And he has a briefcase that's, like, handcuffed to his hand. And he has to go deliver it. And then all of a sudden, he takes it off his arm and puts it on her arm and, like, makes her go.
Basically, he's trying to convince her to do it nicely. But then he's like, you know, okay, well, I'm going to have to force you to do it.
Yeah.
Because he can't go in. Because apparently he's on the outs with these people. These gangsters or whatever they are. They're Korean gangsters that he's supposed to be delivering this to in Thailand. And for some reason, he can't see them, but we don't really know why it is. But he's trying to avoid them.
Yeah. So things don't work out very well at all
for
the guy.
Because he's immediately shot when Lucy reveals that she's there on his behalf to deliver something, whatever it is, in this briefcase.
Yeah. And basically just a bunch of bad guys come and get Lucy and drag her up to the guy's, like, hotel room. And you know right away that this is going to be a horrible experience.
And this is Mr. Jang, played by Min-sik Choi, who is known really for the original Old Boy in 2003 and I Saw the Devil in 2010. But yes, here he is, this villainous gangster character that is always in pursuit of Lucy because of the events that transpire in this hotel room.
Right.
Because she has these drugs.
So basically, the guy, like, makes her open the briefcase because he doesn't want to be in the room.
He doesn't trust her crony that, they shot.
So he makes her open this briefcase, and everybody files out of the rooms. She opens the briefcase, and it's just full of these bags. It's like four or five bags
four bags of blue kind of like
stuff, crystal looking things.
Yeah, blue crystal stuff that is some sort of narcotic. But it is CPH-4 apparently. And what is CPH-4?
Well, I guess basically it's I have no idea. Mothers use it to make their babies.
Apparently, it's something that happens during childbirth in the uterus or something, I guess, that, like, it's produced. And this is sort of a black market synthetic version of that.
It's like for developing the fetus's brain.
Yes, for developing the fetus, developing the child within. Yes. And by creating this, I don't know what they're trying to do. I guess they're trying to market it as, like, a narcotic is what it seems like. But what happens is Lucy ends up getting in this fight, several fights, at one point.
But what happens is they basically turn her into a drug mule.
Yes.
And they slit open her.
Along with three other people.
Yeah, they slit open her tummy.
Her tum-tum.
And put in this pouch.
Yes.
And
so
then
the drugs are within the people themselves.
Yeah.
They're carrying them inside their tums.
Their tummies, so that they can fly.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she gets in this fight, and a guy, you know, has, like, kicked her while she's down. The bag bursts inside of her tummy, and it's leaking. So she starts to get,
like, superpowers.
Affected by this drug. Yeah, she has essentially, these superpowers. She gets shot, like, in the arm or something, and she just, like, digs into her arm with her fingers, pulls out the bullet. She's showing no signs of pain, nothing. Mm-mm. She just digs in there, pulls it out, and tosses it away, you know?
Well, and, like, you have, like, a different storyline going on with Morgan Freeman.
Yes.
And he's, like, a scientist.
He's a scientist.
And he's talking about development of the brain and how humans only use a certain percentage
yes.
of their brain. And if you can get past this point and use a higher amount, which is basically what's happening to Lucy.
Because she's, of this yeah. exposure to CPH4. Yes, apparently, yes, humans use approximately 10% of their brain capacity versus dolphins, Nicole, who use 20%.
That's right.
So the dolphins are much smarter than us.
That's right.
Why they enjoy sex so much and playing around all the time, right?
That's right.
That's what we said in another episode.
Yes, yes.
But anyway,
But dolphins know how to communicate with sonic locations.
Yeah, via sonar, essentially.
Sonar.
And yes.
Yeah. So and humans can't do that. So.
Dolphins are pretty clever. Yeah, that's right. And yes, at one point it's stated in the movie, are humans, Nicole, more concerned with having than doing? And, you know, that's something interesting philosophically that we should all think about, Nicole. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, yes. So Morgan Freeman studying the brain. And basically, what the movie becomes then is she studies Morgan Freeman reading all of his studies on the brain in, like, you know, a few seconds. And then seeks him out to try to get his assistance. Because she needs to continuously keep taking CPH4. And what she does then is acquires the services of Pierre Del Rio, who's played by Amir Waqed. And he's supposed to basically track down the other people that have drugs in their tummies and get those bags.
Tummy drugs.
So that she can utilize them, because apparently she's the only one who's going to make an attempt to use them for good, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, it's kind of the story overall, the script, it's a little convoluted. And maybe, man, you know, for a movie that only runs an hour and basically, like I said, like an hour and 21 minutes, maybe it's a little pretentious to think that you can cover this vast story studying the human brain in that amount of time. I don't know. It's a little weird. But she does keep increasing her brain capacity. It'll flash on the screen, you know, now she's at 30% capacity, you know, 50% capacity. Yeah. And yeah, it just keeps going. And she's developing these abilities where she can, you know,
basically interrupt, like, cell phone, like, I mean, she can hear cell phones. Like, if she can see the frequency and pluck it from the
air or somewhere.
Yeah,
yes.
It's very confusing to non-scientific brains like mine.
but yes.
Basically, that's what it looks like she's doing.
But she also develops, like, telekinetic powers and things like that. She can stop people from moving at will, stop people from doing things at will, move those people then. And, she becomes very super powered because of these drugs. But if the drug starts to wear off, she really begins to, like, falter and start to almost, like, come apart.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's something where she's, you know, this is going to be necessary for her to continue. So she has to find a way out of this situation, kind of. And they sort of explain that at the end in a way that I guess is, you know, technology-based, and with technology you can do everything.
I mean, the
movie... So we're just supposed to accept it, you
I know. Think because of the budget, the movie looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fast-paced because they had to fit it all in.
Yeah.
But they really could have slowed down and explained it a little bit more.
There could have been a little bit...
fleshed out some of the characters a little bit more, too.
Yeah, there could have been a little bit more... a few more dialogue sequences and things like that. We need a little bit more exposition, I think, as far as, explaining some of the details and things like that.
One of the things that, I mean, has to happen because of her character is, like, I don't know, about midway through Scarlett Johansson's character, Lucy, obviously, turns very, like, clinical and just straight. Like, she plays it very, very, like, robotically about halfway through. It just really turns stilted because she's losing all, like, human emotion almost.
Yeah, her humanity is gone at that point.
Yeah.
By expanding her brain, yes, now she's basically like a robot. And that, like, there's one point where she's, like, on the plane and she's, like, typing on, like, two computers at once or something like that. And it was, like, very much like, there are several Star Trek episodes over the years that have, like, sort of similar themes. Yeah. Where, you know, someone's mind is expanded or someone has, you know, joined with the Enterprise computer and become a computer, but they're a human. Or you have, like, Data, the android, who can do everything very quickly, of course. But, yes, it very much reminded me of, like, Star Trek and, like, in the original series, the, I think it was kind of like the second pilot episode that they did. I think it was just called Where No Man Has Gone Before. And yes, it's kind of based on that too, like the expansion of the human brain and like how they become like more than they should be and they become evil, or at least one person definitely becomes evil. Nerd, yes. But yeah.
I didn't think you heard me.
So yeah, it's sort of a character that we've kind of seen before, but it's, I guess, a fresh take on it. I enjoy the movie for what it is. It's okay, and it's so quick. And the pacing is fast. There's a good deal of action. So I don't mind it too much. It's okay. But yeah, like I said, I do feel like it's a little bit pretentious in thinking that in this short time frame of a movie that they can get all of this in there and make it sort of fit and work properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm going to amass it just for the sake of I like these kind of movies. And I'm going to watch it again. And maybe I'll force myself to eventually like it.
Yeah. There are elements that I like about it. I like Scarlett Johansson in the action sequences and things mm-hmm. like that. I think she does a nice job in those. And I guess she does a good job of playing sort of this like cold character who's now, you know, maybe knows more or has become more than she ever expected. And yeah, she can't return, so yeah, it's just odd. But Morgan Freeman is fine. He's fine in the movie. Yes, and the other supporting characters, Min-Sik Choi is very good as the villain too. But yeah, it's okay. I'll amass the movie too. It's fine. I would watch it.
It's again. Definitely not my favorite of the three.
No, this is your least favorite of the three.
This is my least favorite.
My least favorite of the three too, no question. But yeah, it's okay. It's
for the trilogy of the ladies, I think that this worked out.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's worth a watch, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll like it. Maybe you won't. An interesting detail, Nicole, about the Pierre Del Rio character, the actor who plays Pierre Del Rio, Amr Wakid. So apparently, recently, in the past couple of years, he was actually sentenced to 8 years in prison by a military court in Egypt, which is his home country, for speaking out against what he called human rights abuses. However, of course, in Egypt, they call them false news and insulting state institutions. So there are always like two sides to every story. State institutions versus human rights abuse. Anyway, sentenced to 8 years in prison. However, he currently lives in Spain, and he has no plans to ever return to Egypt, so he's probably okay. Yeah.
So he's a man with no country.
He's a man with no country, Nicole.
That's right. Well, yeah. I mean, if I wouldn't go back either if you're going to get in jail.
If you're going to get thrown into prison immediately, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably a good idea to just, stay in Spain. That's fine. Anyway, yeah, Lucy, worth watching, I suppose, but not our favorite of the three at all. Nicole, what do you say we do a closing to this episode?
Okay.
Yeah, let's do a closing.
Let's close it up. Wrap it up.
You know, one thing I want to talk about, Nicole, before I forget, is specifically on Hannah, on the Blu-ray release that we own. Well, Something that bothers me about some of these Blu-ray releases, and it's a good thing about streaming, I guess, is, you know, usually you hit start, and sometimes there'll be like an ad before it, like for another movie or something like that. But a lot of times it just jumps right into the movie. You're just right into the movie. There you go. Bang, you're in, you're going. Well, on a Blu-ray, a DVD, there's a menu a lot of times. There'll be these menus. I appreciate menu design. Menu design, sort of this graphic design technique, is nice. Sometimes they put together these cool menus. That's great. What I don't like about menus, Nicole, is when you put the disc in, the menu comes on, and there are these live scenes from the movie that are playing during the menu screen. Because for me, that's like spoiling the movie again. Like, I haven't seen the movie for a while, and then I'm seeing these scenes, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that, I remember that. And like, I don't want to see that. I want to go back into it as fresh as I can.
Well, you shouldn't watch all of that stuff.
I know, but it's just irritating that they're even there. Why even put those on there? Just have a still image, something like that. Stop putting these motion menus in there with actual scenes from the movie. Damn it.
Okay.
Okay. That's all right, because no one's ever going to make any, like, movies for home video anymore. They'll all be, you know, digital
streaming,
and there won't be any real physical copies anymore anyway, so.
Oh, man. You don't think you have enough?
No. So, anyways, that's one complaint. I'm sorry, Nicole. I'll let that go now.
You'll let it go.
Also, Nicole, since we're talking about these ladies in movies today on this episode.
Okay.
Just today or yesterday, I'm not sure, maybe last night, today, Daria Nicolodi, who was a long-term partner of Dario Argento, has passed away. And she was 70 years old. She was the writer on the original Suspiria, and then appeared in several other Dario Argento movies. I think she has a very brief cameo in Suspiria, but then she's in Deep Red, she's in Tenebrae, she's in Inferno and Phenomena, she's in all of those, and is also the mother of Asia Argento. So, yeah, anyway, but yes. Do you remember who she is? Can you visualize her? She's a very pretty lady. Very pretty Italian lady in those movies, yes. I'll point her out to you the next time
we watch. Okay, next time we watch, you can.
But yeah, she just passed away at age 70. So that's sad. Because without her, you have to, you know, like these Argento movies, they wouldn't be the same without her. So yes, so she had some major contributions to some of those classic Dario Argento movies. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. And just think, Suspiria, that wouldn't be Suspiria without Dario Nicolodi.
No, not at all.
Well, anyway, Nicole. Also, let's talk about something else that we just saw today. So, The Good Son, the movie The Good Son.
Yeah. Oh, man.
With Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood. So, The Good Son, Nicole, it has a weird tone. The tone's kind of all over the place. It's a very, like, 90s movie for sure. Mm-hmm. Very early 90s movie, which it is, 1993. But remember I was like complaining about the font of the movie? What reminded me of this was talking about the graphic design on the DVD menus. Well, the titles in the credits here, the font, I don't know what this font is called. I'm not a graphic designer. Some graphic designer could probably point it out immediately. But this font, I don't know what it is, but it looks like a 90s sitcom font. It looks like a Full House font.
Oh,
it's what it looks like to me. It just doesn't seem to fit The Good Son. It's weird. And these are things that I nitpick about when I'm watching a movie, little details. Like, I would not have chosen that font for The Good Son.
Well, I mean, maybe they were trying to make it light and innocent going into it.
They thought it was going to be too dark with that ending.
I don't know.
And then instead, they're like, hey, Let's Full House this up a little bit. Let's use this font. Yeah, let's do it. Everybody will think it's cute and funny. But you're already in the movie then.
I guess. But you know, some people just, you know, are just reading the words. They're not staring at the font.
I guess. To me, it's a stupid looking font.
You need some
choice.
Continuitous with the font and the movie.
It should fit the movie, don't you think? Like, if you use that on a lighthearted comedy.
Continuity. What did I say?
That's what you said, I think.
Anyway, you need continuity with the font.
Yes.
In the movie.
Yes. It has to kind of fit. Yeah. It, you know, this isn't some lighthearted comedy from the 80s or something like that. No. We need a font that fits the tone of the movie.
So you need something like morbid and creepy.
Yes. Something that looks a little bit more serious. And then you got the scene kind of toward the beginning where the two boys, they've kind of just met. Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin. So they're in this warehouse or something, throwing rocks through the windows, smashing the windows, being like the guy comes out. And he's like, "Come back here, you little bastards," because he's chasing them out of there. Because, yes, they were breaking the windows. So they're running away. And after they've done this, which they shouldn't have done, there's this whimsical music, this whimsical score playing over it. It's like, these kids were just being, like, terrible, mischievous kids. Time for a whimsical score. So, yeah, again, like, I don't know, the tone is weird, Nicole. All right. That's enough about the good son.
It's enough.
So, Nicole, you got anything else you want to say about these movies we talked about today?
No, I think I'm good.
Oh, you're all good, huh? Okay.
I'm good.
So, now let's say, now Lucy was obviously third.
Right.
That was third. If you had to go Hannah, if you had to rank Hannah versus Run Lola Run 1 and 2, could you do it?
Well, they're two completely different movies.
God, they're so different, Craig.
I think that if given, like, say in a month or so.
1 month.
Just a little bit of time. Give me a little time. And you said, well, which one do you want to watch?
December 26th.
I think I'm going to pick Hannah.
Oh, because okay.
I never want to see, I don't want to overwatch Run Lola Run.
Okay.
Because I think it's better when you haven't seen it in a while.
Yes. When it remains kind of fresh.
When it remains kind of fresh.
I can understand
that. I love it. I think it's good and quirky and all the good things. However, I don't want to overwatch it. Hannah, I think you can overwatch.
You can overwatch and it's still fine.
It's still fine. Yeah, okay. It still holds up. I don't think Run Lola Run is going to, you know, not hold up, but I think it's better on a fresh set of eyes.
Okay. All right. I think I would do the same thing. Thank you, Nicole.
You're welcome.
Yes. So, Nicole, what do we have coming up in the future here? We have a Christmas episode is going to be coming up. Horror for the Holidays 2. We'll have to do that.
Horror for the Holidays.
And then we'll have some other episode coming up. I kind of wanted to do some sort of a classic science fiction episode. So maybe we'll work that in somewhere in December. We'll see. Anyway, for today, Nicole, I think we better sign off because we still got to watch this Maniac with Elijah Wood and see what happens.
That's right.
All right. Nicole, where can our listeners find us?
On Facebook.
Oh, they can find us on Facebook?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That is on the page, A Cure for the Common Craig.
Instagram.
That is Cure for the Common Craig.
Twitter.
You can find us at Common Craig.
And our website.
A website, and that is cureforthecommoncraig.com. Yes, Nicole. So now, I still feel full from the lasagna, but...
Me too.
I might have to force down one cookie.
No, I'm not doing it.
One cookie.
I just want some water.
Oh my God. Just give me some water. All right. Listeners, thank you for listening. As always, we hope that you have a nice holiday season and that you don't die. Yes.
Stay safe and happy.
Yes. All right. Good night, listeners. Thank you.
combination of sounds with a view to beauty of form and expression of emotion.
Yeah!